Bill Flores joins us from D.C. It's going to be 63 today, Bill. What's it going to be up there?
Well, it's going to be between 31 and 36, and wow. I think we're supposed to get about 12 inches of snow.
Well, there you go.
I'll email a picture to you, and you can post it.
See, I don't know why you guys decided to keep the Capitol up there. But anyway, hey, let's talk for a minute before
that predates me. You know that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's before you got there. But before we talk about the business of the House, I'd like to get your thoughts on a couple of things. First of all, there seems to be a great deal of concern about what's going on over in Iran. George Mattis yesterday, the general of the U.S. Central Command, said that he had heard from at least one other nation at the leadership level that they will seek nuclear weapons if Iran goes nuclear. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, the general is rightly concerned. When Iran gets a nuclear weapon, and it's just a matter of the timing, because their objective is to have one, then that destabilizes the rest of the Middle East, and you're going to have this situation where other countries feel like in order to avoid that instability and protect their own population, they have to have the same capabilities. It's unfortunate. I think if we would do the right thing, we could stop Iran and take this off the table where we don't further have an unstable Middle East. We already have enough problem with the so-called Arab Spring. Now we've got about three countries that have unstable governments, and the last thing we need is more instability over there.
The interesting story this morning, Eric Holder responding to questions from Rand Paul having to do with carrying out drone strikes against an American on American soil. And he basically said it is possible, I suppose, to imagine an extraordinary circumstance in which it would be necessary and appropriate under the Constitution and applicable laws of the U.S., for the president to authorize the military use of lethal force within the territory of the United States. That's a little troubling.
Well, it's very troubling, and the attorney general is wrong, and that's the reason I and several of my House colleagues continue to demand his resignation. I don't know that Attorney General Holder has ever read the Constitution, or he would know better than to say something like that, or even think it. The guy is way off base. As far as I'm concerned, his crimes against the American people are many, and he needs to be out of office, out of his office at this point in time.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. this morning. This afternoon, I guess the House is planning to put forth the vote on the Republican plan, designed to, I guess, for lack of a better term, maybe sand off some of the rough edges on the $85 billion in budget cuts that are coming up. That's going to pass, you presume?
I think it will. We whipped the vote last week on a conceptual continuing resolution, and I don't know. I'm never privy to what the results of the whip count are, but my assumption is that it will pass. Now there are some things in this bill, in this continuing resolution, that are good, particularly for our military, for military construction accounts, and also for our Veterans Administration. There are also some things that I don't like, But again, on a continuing resolution, you never get your appropriations just right. That's the reason I don't like continuing resolutions. But the flip side is a government shutdown, and I don't think that we need that right now, given all the uncertainty that the sequesters cause. We don't need to add more uncertainty on top of the Washington uncertainty that's already out there.
Okay, so Bill Flores gets the magic wand. What are a couple of things that you would like to see that you would hope could be in there in a world that you think would be good?
Well, I'd like to go back and add limitation amendments like we did in our very first continuing resolution in 2011, and that would strip out funding for taxpayer-funded abortions, Planned Parenthood, the implementation of Obamacare, public broadcasting, things of that nature, federal interference with state and local education, spending on travel and conferences, spending on the free cell phone program. I mean, I could find $85 billion in about 20 minutes.
Because it's good you don't have any ideas.
Well, yeah, and the American people would never feel it either. I could do this a lot. You know, look at how punitive the president's been. He decided yesterday he was going to shut down White House tours. Now, if he would park Air Force One for a couple of hours, he could fund the White House tours for the rest of this year.
Probably
But that's just not the way he's wired.
Is it safe to say then at this point that a tax increase seems unlikely?
I think it's virtually impossible to get it unless somehow he has the victory he wants in the 2014 elections.
Now, I also saw yesterday that Republican leadership has talked about they're going to bring to the floor, it's called the Skills Act, which reauthorizes some workforce investment. I'd like to get your thoughts on whether or not that will work, because it seems to be falling along party lines.
Well, our federal employment programs, or federal employment training programs, are a disaster. We spend tens of billions of dollars a year on these programs that are driven by bureaucrats instead of driven by employer needs. And so you've got 200-plus programs that have not dented the unemployment. They haven't put people in the training programs that are needed for today's economy. And what the Skills Act does is basically restructure all of those programs so that they're much more driven by what the work for, by where our workforce is today versus what we need. So it's a good program. We're going to have more to talk about it over the next few weeks, because it's one of those things that the American people hired us to do, is come up there and fix the government bureaucracy to make it responsive.
Sure. There was a luncheon a couple of weeks ago, the Tuesday group, and they got pretty angry at Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan. He conceded that he might have to change the Medicare retirement benefits for people from 55 years to older, maybe as high as 59. And while the specifics haven't come out yet, both Ryan and Mitt Romney had cited the 55-year-old figure during their run for the White House. It seems like he may be backing down from that now.
Well, yeah, here's why. When we rolled out our budget last year, they had Medicare reforms to save Medicare not only for today's seniors but for future seniors. We said that we were going to have a different Medicare program for those 55 and younger, or under 55. Well, that cohort, that birth cohort, if you will, has aged another year, and Medicare is another year more insolvent. And so theoretically, the more insolvent that Medicare gets, the higher you need to raise the age in order to be able to make the appropriate adjustments so they will survive, for my grandchildren's generation. But based on the numbers that we got just yesterday, it looks like we, and I can't put this in a bank for our constituents yet, but it looks like we'll be able to keep the 55-year-old age for the new Medicare. Let me rephrase that. 55 and above will have the current Medicare. 54 and younger will have new Medicare under our reform package. I think that's the way it's going to be, but I will say this. Every year that we don't touch Medicare, the problem becomes much more worse, and the unfunded obligations of Medicare grow by trillions of dollars.
Yeah, because it's really kind of a big deal, because centrists, and I don't know how many centrists there are out there, but they're pretty angry about this, because a lot of people feel like if 55 was going to be the number, and people like you and every member of House is going to have to run for re-election again, and if 55 was the number, to have to come back and change that number and make it go up is something that's going to be pretty uncomfortable to have to answer for.
Well, I agree with that. But when we rolled the budget out last year, we said at or near retirement is not going to have a change. Well, some people put that in their mind and then ran on 55. Well, that was not a good thing to do, but they did. And so we have to be responsive to that, and we've looked at the CBO numbers, and we can get by one more year by holding it at 55, and I think that's what we're going to do when we roll our budget out next Tuesday. But we've got to get away from we've either got to clock it to a birth year, or we've got to get away from a hard age. We've got to do something different, and because I think some people didn't pay attention to what we said in terms of marketing the new budget, and so they put an age in there instead of saying something generic like at or near retirement.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. A little bit of housekeeping. You have a budget that you run your office on, and it seems like most everybody was able to come in at under budget, and I think they actually want to kind of draw back a little bit on what your budget will be to run your office. But tell me what your numbers were as far as percentage of what was allocated to you and what you spent.
Well, for calendar year 2011, to sort of set the baseline, that budget was reduced by 5% from the last budget that Chet Edwards had in 2010. That said, we were still able to return $167,000, or about 12% of our budget, back to the taxpayer.
Okay.
For this year, for fiscal 2012 that just ended, that budget was reduced by another 6% from the 2011 number, but we were still able to return $94,000, or about 7% of our budget. If the budget hadn't been reduced, we would have returned somewhere in the neighborhood of $184,000. Or actually, what I'm trying to say is we ran the office more cheaply in 2012 than we did in 2011.
That's good. We're headed in the right direction there.
Oh, I agree. And then for what it's worth, post-sequester for 2013, the budget's been cut by another 5.7%. So we're getting it right over here in the House. Now, the Senate just had their first cut because of sequestration. They're sort of squawking about it.
Well, you know, join the club.
They got to grow up and put on their big boy pants.
That's it. Finally today, we got an email question, and I appreciate this person sending them in. And if you have questions for the congressman, send them to us, and we'll have a look at them. This person basically said, Boehner and Cantor and the other House leadership have agreed with Democrats in the House to vote on the continuing resolution that's going to happen today. Within it, they agree not to vote on any more spending cuts or cutting bills. They basically are tired of fighting with the president. And to stop fighting is a defeatist thought, as far as I'm concerned. If House leadership is not going to lead, then they need to pass the gavel to those who will.
Well, I would disagree with the writer's comments. Let me say this. There are six different fiscal discussion points that we have in the federal government. The first one this year was the fiscal cliff bill. And in that bill, taxes were avoided on large groups of the economy, and some taxes went up on a part of the economy. I voted against that. We had a fight, but it was more of a skirmish, I would guess, on that one. The next one was a debt ceiling debate that we had that occurred back in January. And at that point in time, we got no budget, no pay passed, which is going to force the Senate to produce a budget for the first time in 4 years. So you had a fight there, but I would say it was more of a skirmish than a fight. Then the sequester kicked in on March 1st. We held the line there. We had the fight. We won. The sequester is going into effect, and we're going to save $85 billion in the spending because of that. And so the deficit is going to go down by $85 billion. We held the line there. The next one, and I think this is what the writer is talking about, is that we are caving on the CR. Now, I don't know why they're saying that we're caving on the CR, because we're holding the post-sequester numbers in this continuing resolution, and we're also fixing some issues related to the sequester that were adversely affecting the Defense Department, Veterans Administration, and military construction. The rest, and we did fix some other problems. So, again, it wasn't a big fight. I mean, there were some things. People want to strip out Obamacare. People want to strip out all the other things I talked about earlier in this conversation about fixing spending. But this is not the place to do that. On top of the sequester, you don't want to add a government shutdown to the conversation to disrupt the lives of the American people. The next big fiscal point in time is going to be the release of the House budget. As I said earlier, we're going to roll that out next Tuesday. I think the American people are going to like it. It's going to show a path to balance in 10 years. It's based on real numbers and no funny business on the accounting side. And I really think, and we're going to fight for that. We're going to pass it, and the American people will get to see what's going to happen.
We'll look forward. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and then finally, the debt ceiling. There's going to be another debt ceiling fight in May, and that's one where we're going to have that. You know, in order to get the debt ceiling increased, you've got to reform your entitlements, or you've got to reduce spending, one or both. And so I disagree with the writer. I believe that leadership is fighting. We are fighting. We're being careful about we're being judicious in the fights we pick.
Lots of battles to come, and we'll talk about, I guess, that new budget when it rolls out next week.